I hope by now that the agenda has arrived by Oxwagon. And some members need to go to other committees, and I have to be aware of that. As we move through this, I would like a new agenda myself. It would be very helpful if the chair can be given a copy of the correct agenda. Next thing I'm going to think this is sabotage. I have never, it's 25 years next year, walking in without agendas, documents. What sort of institution are we developing? The adoption of the agenda. You will see that the minutes are first, because some members have to go to other committees. The agenda is correct here. It is unfortunate that the minutes aren't physically here, although they are printed and have been for a week. So that is something that I hope a member of staff is looking for the assistant who needs a navigator. We are then going to immediately go on after that minutes to the briefing and consideration of the TFTA. And then tea break in due course. The NRCS is here, I'm sure, as is the LOA, etc. And then we're going to distribute the second draft of the study tour report, debt. But what we do need, you'll see there it says debt. The study tour was in two, phases. We went and did debt and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The Fourth Industrial Revolution is not finalized, so what we are going to do is to deal with the debt first today, adopt that, get it out the way before the Act comes back to us, as it were. And then we will deal with the Fourth Industrial Revolution tomorrow, I understand. They distributed tomorrow. So when it says distribution, we will not adopt it, but just engage on it, and then tomorrow morning we will adopt that report. Then we have the briefing by DTI on the Eskom inquiry, matters relating to SABS. The matters relating to SABS are not only on the Eskom inquiry, and what it should say here is briefing by the DTI on that, indeed, and SABS response, but also an oversight engagement with SABS. The committee, I know SABS isn't here, but maybe members, I know the DG is here. What the CEO needs to be made aware of is that every time an entity is invited here does not constitute an inquiry in every respect, but rather oversight over that entity. and we've indicated that we would like to raise other issues as well with the SABs, as they already will be here. So there aren't terms of reference per se for an oversight engagement. And I must make that clear, because the committee secretary has been asked several times to furnish the terms of the inquiry. We did not conduct an inquiry, the department did. So on that note, with the changes made, and the minutes are here, are they? We will, and this is the manner in which I want this agenda adopted, so members understand clearly. We will adopt the agenda, and we will consider the minutes before tea. We're not going to wait for them, all right? Thank you. So I would normally welcome all our guests. I will just welcome the DG here, whom I see right in front of me. And I think we've got on your left, is that, who have we got there? It's not Mama Demisa, who is it?
It's Wamkele Mena, Madam Chair.
All right. And I see the people from CEO here. But we've got Mr. Mene, Chief Director, International Trade and Economic Development Division, and the DG. Let us proceed in that manner, please. And remember, this is the first time that some members will be given a briefing on this issue.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Let me, as I said, Wamkele will be doing the presentation, a sort of a brief overview of ratification of the Tripartite Free Trade Area. As you are aware, that African trade integration and the negotiation of trade agreements on the continent is our first priority as a country. So we have been engaged in two processes. The one is the Tripartite Free Trade Area, which covers about 26 countries. And then, as you know, more recently, Wamkele has just come back from Senegal, where there is advanced negotiations around the Continental Free Trade Area. And as I said, he's just informed us now the Ministers of Justice have signed off on the legal documentation. So it also means now South Africa is in a position to sign the Continental Free Trade Area. But this presentation will be on the Tripartite Free Trade Area. Honourable Chair, just on the SABs issue, which we'll be dealing with later, I was just being asked to convey by the Minister, who is in Cabinet this morning, that with regards to the SABs matter, he has, on Friday last week, the 8th of June, he did notify the board members of a notice of intention to remove them or to suspend them as a board because of a range of governance and other institutional issues. As you know, in terms of the law, both the SABs Act and our administrative laws, we have to follow a due process if you want to remove any board. And the first step in that is to give your notice of intention to those members, then allow them, and he has given them 5 days in which to respond to that. Once he gets his response, he will obviously consider their representation and then make a decision. But he asked me to inform the committee that he is seized with the matter and he is dealing with the matter. But then I'll hand over to Wamkele.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, honourable members.
One moment.
Yes.
The Secretary of the Portfolio Committee has reminded me that we didn't actually adopt the agenda. I asked you to factor in the minutes. It does need to be formally. Thank you, Honourable Tiako Rahna. Seconded by the Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, as the DG was saying, I will be presenting on the tripartite free trade area, which is in the process here in Parliament, going through the ratification process, so that South Africa can be the fourth or the fifth member to ratify the agreement. And briefly, by way of background, the tripartite free trade area comprises COMESA, the East African Community, and SADC, and it was launched in Egypt in Sharm el-Sheikh by heads of states of the three regional economic organizations in June 2015. We negotiated a main agreement which establishes the free trade area, and the attached to the main agreement are what we call the annexes, which is where the regulations of each specific trade area are contained in the agreement itself. Minister Davis signed the agreement on behalf of the President last year in July, and thus far 22 members of the 26 countries have signed the agreement. The entry into force threshold is 14 countries. So once 14 countries have deposited their instruments of ratification, the agreement then enters into force. We have three countries that have ratified the agreement thus far: Egypt, Uganda, and as of a few days ago, Kenya deposited their instrument of ratification. Now, the basis for the tripartite is, you will remember, honorable members, that the DTI under Minister Davis's leadership slightly changed the focus of free trade areas to focus more on development imperatives. And in this regard, the basis of this agreement is a combination of industrial development, infrastructure development, and of course market integration, which is distinct from previous FTAs and traditional free trade areas where the imperative is only market access, it's just commercial interest. So here in this different approach, we have added a strong development dimension in recognition of the fact that it is not only tariffs or regulatory barriers that you require in order to expedite economic growth in a particular region, but there are other areas as well. And the purpose of concluding the agreement is the harmonization of trade regimes in the three regional economic communities. You will remember that we had a problem of multiple membership, so that this TFTA seeks to rationalize those FTA memberships. It will facilitate a free movement of business persons, joint implementation of regional infrastructure programs, and then, of course, the development of regional value chains. So the ratification request that has been put to Parliament in front of yourselves relates only to the market integration pillar. We have not yet reached an agreement in the industrial and infrastructure development pillars, which means, therefore, that we do not require ratification on those other two pillars at this point. The key features of the tripartite free trade area is that it has, as I said earlier, a very strong developmental dimension. We recognize the differentials in levels of economic development amongst us as members of the tripartite, which is why we have provisions such as special and differential treatment, flexibility to be taken into account where you have specific economic situations that require that if you need more time for tariff liberalization, you are granted more time based on specific, as I said, specific economic situations, such as the balance of payments, problems, and the like. It is a variable geometry regarding liberalization, which means that each region moves as fast as it is able to, and the rest of the tripartite members will follow. And the reason this is a very important principle is because there are some countries who are not able to move and liberalize as fast as others, or there are some countries whose sectors are sensitive and they require more time to transition in the FTA. And so this is one of the other development features of this agreement. And of course, we are building on the existing acquis of regional economic communities, which means that we're building on, for example, what we as SADC have achieved under the SADC Free Trade Protocol. We use it, the SADC Free Trade Protocol, as a basis to engage and negotiate with the EAC and COMESA. And in this regard, there is no expectation that you will roll back on the commitments that you undertook in the SADC free trade area, that you roll back in the context of the tripartite free trade area. And the objective here is to create a single tripartite free trade area market to overcome the challenges of the multiple memberships of RECs. And then, of course, for us in South Africa, this has immense benefits, as you will see in the next slide. It gives us access to new and dynamic markets. The tripartite area includes Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Uganda, Kenya, which are some of the fastest growing economies in the African continent. And it presents us with an opportunity to penetrate a population of approximately 626 million people, which is just over half the total African population and economy. We hope, and the evidence has suggested to us that this will build on the current share that South Africa has, because we will move beyond the static market and we will move into dynamic markets. And moving into these dynamic markets, will be our expansion into these dynamic markets will be underpinned by a legal regime that will protect our investors and our exporters, which is not the case at the moment. We also believe that it has the potential to stimulate industrial development, investment, and job creation, and at the same time, it will promote intra-regional investment in the tripartite region. There will be a phase two. What we have completed thus far is phase one, which is trading goods. There will be a phase two, which will include investment. And in this investment negotiation, when we do get to it, we will use our Protection of Investment Act as a basis for negotiating the investment chapter in the tripartite negotiations. We will have legal certainty and predictability of the markets in the tripartite retail area because each member state will be bound by the market access provisions and obligations that they provide. And so this means that the situations that we have had in the past, where in some countries South African goods and products have been arbitrarily either detained at the border or additional SPS requirements imposed on them, which are not imposed on other importing countries, this will provide us with a measure of market predictability and certainty. It also has, the agreement also has a dispute settlement mechanism, And the dispute settlement mechanism is delinked from national courts. It comprises of international trade law experts who will be ad hoc adjudicators where a dispute arises, and there is a set of criteria that has been agreed on which determines how a person is eligible to be in the dispute settlement panel. Again, this is another positive feature because it takes away the adjudication of a trade dispute. It takes it away from a jurisdiction which may not be partial in the manner in which the trade dispute is managed or adjudicated, and it puts it in the hands of a panel that is neutral and has the requisite expertise. It also, the agreement also has a benefit in the sense that it will have it will create a single rule book for trade and investment, intellectual property rights, and competition in the tripartite area. So our investors will have a greater sense of what rules they should expect will apply to them, whether they are investing or trading in Egypt, in Kenya, in Malawi. The same rules will apply, and this will have positive spillover effects for boosting intra-regional trade. Now, at the moment, our trade with tripartite area countries stands as follows. We in 2017, our total trade with TFTA countries was just over $27 billion U.S. dollars, and the bulk of this was with countries such as Egypt, Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, and then of course our traditional markets in the SADC area. We hope that this agreement will trigger South African exports to account for over 3.3 of tripartite exports, which will, in our estimation, will create a will enable us to receive about 2% of tripartite free trade area imports from countries such as Egypt. And the point, I think, the point to emphasize here is that South Africa's trade with tripartite countries represents about 16%. Of South Africa's overall trade with the rest of the world. So it's quite an important market, taking into account, as I said earlier, the fast and dynamic growing economies such as Egypt, Rwanda, and so on. I will go very quickly, Madam Chair, over the negotiating process. We work very closely with the departments, the line function departments, such as DAF, on SPS and agriculture issues, on customs issues. We work very closely with SARS, and then of course with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. In accordance with the Constitution and with the NEDLAC Act, we consult very closely with NEDLAC. And all our positions, our ultimate negotiating positions, are taken through the NEDLAC process. You will note in your packs that we did obtain legal opinions from DERCO, and the legal opinion from DERCO sets out that the agreement is not inconsistent with any other obligation that South Africa has internationally. And the Department of Justice, the opinion sets out that the agreement is not in conflict with municipal law or with domestic law. And these opinions were the basis for the issuance of the presidential minute for the executive branch to sign the agreement. We negotiate as SACU, as you are aware, Madam Chair, and honourable members are aware. And in this negotiation, South Africa was the coordinator on behalf of SACU. The manner in which we undertook the practical negotiations is that we agreed that we will not negotiate with countries with whom we already have preferential arrangements. In other words, South Africa is not going to negotiate with Malawi because we already are both members of SADC. So we will negotiate with the East African countries such as Rwanda, Kenya, and the North African countries such as Egypt and Libya. At the moment, we are engaged in tariff negotiations with the East African community and Egypt. And once we conclude that negotiation, the tariff schedule that we agreed to will then form part of the main agreement. Other partners that we intend to negotiate with include Djibouti, Eritrea, Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt, which I just mentioned. And as I said, because the focus is on those countries with whom you don't have an agreement with. I mentioned earlier, Madam Chair, that there is an industrial development pillar and an infrastructure development pillar, and the work is ongoing. But I must confess that it is not moving as quickly as we would like. There is also a protocol on movement of business persons. DTI doesn't lead that negotiation. It is the Department of Home Affairs that leads that negotiation. Phase two, once ministers have signed off and have agreed on the outcomes of phase one, they will then direct us to commence phase two negotiations. Then by way of concluding, Madam Chair, the DG in his opening remarks mentioned that we are also engaged in the negotiations of the African Continental Free Trade Area. And we intend, and we have agreed, in fact, in the African Continental Free Trade Area, that whatever we achieve in each respective REC or in each regional free trade area, that it will be the basis for the AFCFTA. In other words, there is to be complementarity between what is happening at continental level and also what is happening at each regional economic community. The ratification by South Africa will send a very strong signal of commitment to regional integration, and also it will protect our investors, and it will protect our exporters, provide them with a legal certainty that doesn't exist outside of SADC at the moment. And lastly, Madam Chair, it will bring South African exporters closer to enjoying free trade or preferential treatment under the FTA, particularly in countries where we currently enjoy no preferential market access. So that is the end of the presentation, Madam Chair and honourable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. And my apologies for being asked for part of the presentation, but I know everyone else was here, and that members of the committee would like to engage on the matter. Honourable Hadebe, Honourable Williams, Honourable McPherson, Honourable McLaubel, Honourable Eersterhazen. Yes. In that order for the moment. Can we start?
So thank you, Chairperson. I think first of all, a person has to appreciate the value of his input which is made here. But I think that we are moving from a position of a serious disadvantage, whereby the docs we just received them this morning here in the meeting, of which we are supposed to have engaged with them thoroughly before we come down. Because I think that from what is expected of us is to endorse this so that the Parliament can ratify that.
I think that we should have gone to town. I don't know whether before I came here we did engage with it before. But then if it is only then that we get a document and then we have to engage and then take a decision around that, then there's a serious flaw and a disadvantage. But the presentation is good. I think it is highly appreciated because we know very well that long time ago, our colonial masters ensured that there was no intra-Africa trade. All the infrastructure was geared towards the ports so that the raw materials could be shipped out of the continent and make the colonial masters rich. I think that this issue of the tripartite free trade agreement is very important. In particular, when you look at the fact that it deals with market integration, industrial development, and infrastructure development. Because if we cannot have an integrated infrastructure within the African countries, the issue of the growth of the economy of Africa is going to be a pipe dream. You go to any regional trading zone, you can go to the EU. The majority of the goods which are sold by the EU countries are sold between themselves so that you cut the cost of transport to go to port. So it means that if Africa will not be integrated infrastructurally, even with the issue of does not have market integration, does not have the common rule. One thing which is very revolutionary about this thing is the single rule book. So that when you go to the various ports of entry, when a goods or a truck goes through the bait bridge in Zimbabwe, it must not be stopped in Zambia. It must just go straight to Kampala, which is necessary, if the goods are going there. If it has been processed through the bait bridge and the goods are going through the truck straight to Egypt, to the airport, they must not be stopped along the way. If we can have that integrated type of facilitation processes, then Africa will grow to its capacity. And then, Chair, the other issue which is also good about this issue is the issue of the flexibility and differential treatment. There's one thing which happened when the heads of state were deciding on the continental free trade agreement.
Yes.
I was shocked where I was seated when they even spoke about the issue of the single currency. I said, single currency? When you don't even have the single rule book to deal with this thing? When you don't have the common border control? But I think this one is putting the right blocks at the right time. And then South Africa can only benefit from that. Because as we know, Jeff, is that South Africa is one economy in African continent which produces manufactured goods for the continent. So it is going to be in the interest of South Africa that we ratify this thing as of yesterday. We must have ratified as of yesterday so that our partners above, all over the continent, can really appreciate that. But what is worrying me, Chair, is that when the issue of negotiating with Arab in the first negotiation process, other parties they have to negotiate with is Djibouti, Eritrea, and Sudan. And then I don't see South Sudan, one of the youngest countries in the African continent. And those people need all the support they can get. Why is the DCI not engaging with them in particular, so that they can be part of this very important process? And then the issue of the movement of the business people, persons, that one we need a clear definition. Who are these business people? Good point. Will they only speak about the high income type of people who are rich? What about the ordinary people who are running smaller enterprises? Are they considered part of that? Yes. And then if you say there's going to be free movement, are they going to have a single passport? But as you said, that is the mandate of Home Affairs. But we must know before we can endorse this, what we're entering into. Thank you, Chairperson. I think this thing is long overdue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable William.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I also believe that this is a very good initiative. But yesterday we engaged with the sugar industry, and they said to us that, or we were informed, that 46% of our sugar is imported from Swaziland. So I just want to know, what can we do to protect our, in this case, they said they were a failing sector, the failing sugar sector, but also other sectors that are
that are coming under pressure from cheap imports because we can't put tariffs on them. So how do we protect our own industries? You know, this agreement is all well and fine for those people that are exporting, but for instance, our sugar industry has got a serious problem from cheap imports coming from Swaziland. So how do we protect them and also other local companies or local sectors that are coming under pressure? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. I just want to say, DG, you know, that these agreements you know, only work if the finer details are you know, are thrashed out and properly considered. And I think that we too often jump at these sort of agreements and then start to see years down the line how sometimes they actually don't work out. And I think that actually the position that we face in SACU at the moment is a great example of how we're actually, you know, on the wrong end of that agreement, and other countries are actually benefiting off of our inputs financially to actually harm us and to actually export back into us duty free. So I think that that we need to certainly take into consideration things like, you know, does free trade equal free movement of people, and how does that exactly work, and how is that going to be administered? How do we still maintain our trade policy sovereignty, and we don't find ourselves in a situation like in the European Union, where you have one body of unelected individuals that determine you know, trade policies for an entire bloc of nations? What we can't see is this morph into something further down the line of a bigger single customs union throughout Africa. But I also think that there's a lot of things that we can take advantage of. Like, what is the strategy to take advantage of our access to new markets? I think, you know, far too often we don't, one of the biggest, you know, I think breakthroughs for the department, certainly since I've been in Parliament, has been Invest Africa, where you have all Invest South Africa. We have a single body that is solely focused on outward new market investment-led growth. So, you know, I think that while we must certainly welcome free trade, we also need to work out how are we going to take advantage of that in identifying new markets for our exporters. And then I just want to understand something with respect to the agreement and its implementation, because on the first page you say that 22 of the 26 member states have signed the agreement. Then you say the agreement will enter into force once it's been ratified by 14 member states, and thus far only Egypt and Uganda have ratified the agreement. So I'm a bit confused. Are you saying that 22 of the 26 have signed a declaration? Is that it? And actually not ratified the agreement. So that should actually be the declaration and not the agreement. All right. And then what is the strategy then to bring you know, that agreement into force by getting 22 members to sign on? And when is it envisaged that process would be concluded by?
Thank you very much. We did then have, I think it was, just looking back, Honourable Maklobo. And after Honourable Maklobo, Honourable Esther Hazen.
No, thanks, Honourable Comrade Chair, and thanks to Comrade DG. Well, I hope I'm not having a second bite on this thing. Firstly, just to welcome the presentation. I think South Africa, we need to respect that we have been at the forefront to spearhead regional economic integration. And as public representatives, we need to support that. But we need also to deal with the mechanics. because I know the agreement was signed some time back, and we need to be able to move because now there's also the continental one. In other words, we should be moving in terms of action. But it's very important that we remain cautious to say what are the advantages and disadvantages. A small comment, I'm happy that the benefits are clear in terms of the free trade areas and the economic blocks. In terms of the population size and so forth, is very good. But you need also just to put some of the issues that will normally worry, the balance view. Remember, there are certain concerns. But we know that...
Comrade Chair, I'm being disturbed.
You will know that the benefits are very big, but there are these pertinent issues that you need to be able to give some comfort. We know that these benefits, they outweigh the negatives. But in the presentation, we have not put in the negatives. One of the negatives that we have, you could see the issue of protectionism, the issue of national interest. That's why you could see the appetite that even if the leaders have agreed at the AU level, but you could still see that the ratification is taking long. That's one issue. People are complaining about defending certain things without looking at the positives. But also the issues about of the domestication. Remember, there are domestic laws and the impact that is there. Sometimes when we make a presentation, our presentation does not assist to say what is an impact. What are these going to be impediments? Are there certain laws in South Africa that need to be amended? Imagine in a comrade, you just throw this thing in. We must just drive without a GPS. You could have said, you know what, these are the implications. Legally, what are the implications getting in there? Whether in terms of the legislation, is it enabling? Whether there are other agreements, are they enabling? Remember, Comrade D, you are still finalizing the question of SACUNE. But this one, we should not be able to hold it back. But give that particular information. Then there's also the question of the systems that immediately it becomes effective. What is our readiness? And normally that report to say how ready are we, whether the current environment and infrastructure is adequate to deal with that. One of the things that we'll always be worried about is certain countries that could be used as a conduit. The product is not made in Africa, but a funny person from a funny country, if there's something like that, they ship this thing into a particular country. And then from there, they do the labeling, made. Let me not use the country because this thing is always an open meeting. Let me keep it to myself. I will not say it yet. And then it comes. Then we get to be flooded. Remember, there is also a complaint, Comrade PG, about imbalanced trade. You know, South Africans have benefited more in terms of democracy. We are doing more business with the continent. And the continent has always been complaining how we do certain things. But generally, you have our full support. But don't make us to send a report to Parliament. That is an incomplete report. Yes. What are the blind spots? Just from the current environment, legislative-wise, system-wise, readiness. Then when we present there, it shows that we have applied our mind. But the bigger picture, that there is one African continent, we can't be continuously be divided by this thing of the borders. We're going to trade amongst ourselves so that we can be able to use the advantage of nearly a billion people we have. This is the biggest thing. The last thing that I needed to say, Chen, DG, we can't say this matter is with Home Affairs. Remember, there is one government. There are no compartments. You know there's a decision that there is one African passport we took. And we know that South Africa is working on those particular modalities. And some people in South Africa actually did receive those passports. We can't say, no, we're still waiting for someone. And there is an implication, like Honorable Comrade Tadebe is speaking. If the goods are moving, then the people will have to move. Then there is a question of infrastructure, that from Cape to Karoo must be able to transport our things. The air transport must be able to do that. That's why I'm talking about the other things that we need to be able to do. But generally, I'm happy that ultimately we are here, and we are sending good news that also the continental one, the teams, they think that there is nothing that stops us. Let's proceed. Thank you.
I think Honorable McLaughlin was the last member to want to come. Oh, Honorable Esther Hazen.
Thank you for remembering me, Madam Chair.
No, your colleague did, yes.
Madam Chair, October of the DG, my questions is more aimed at you. I think when did the Rwanda thing happen? This was signed in July 2017 by South Africa. I seem to remember that the Minister Davies didn't sign it in Rwanda. I think the two biggest players, South Africa and Nigeria, didn't sign it. Wasn't this after?
That was the Continental Free Trade.
Okay. Because South Africa is more to benefit from this than any other country. I think we export something like 380 billion rand to the rest of Africa, and we only import just over 125 million. So it gives us a trade surplus of over 200 billion rand, which is excellent, absolutely excellent for South Africa. But how will the smaller countries in Africa benefit from this, who don't have production capacities, that signed this agreement? They can import finished goods for much cheaper from China and from India, for example. One of the purposes of this agreement, I would say, is keeping outside competitors out, just exactly for this reason, this agreement, China and India. And also the aim should be to improve the export of value-added production. DG, how will South Africa compete with being the most hostile, most expensive labor force in Africa, in the world, I can even say? Now this is what we aim to do. We cannot compete with China, for example. Some of the foreign companies in this country is already moving up to North Africa and other places where there's cheaper labor and hostile labor. And will all the African leaders sacrifice short-term income, you know, immediate money that they can get products and stuff from China, I think, and make money for their country in the long-term gains of signing this agreement, which will benefit them in the long term, but giving up that immediate money. And South Africa is also known, and Africa is actually known for its lack of infrastructure, our border controls, our corrupt officials. How do you see this? How do you see this in this free trade agreement? How are we going to overcome all this? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Esther Hazen. Thank you very much. One point that I have, which... Yeah, you didn't have your hand up, Emma.
Yeah.
Yes, you may go ahead. I just thought, well, am I forgetting everyone now? Go ahead.
Just a related point. Obviously, this is a welcome step. Single market for goods and services across the continent, and for free movement between business people and investments is highly potentially beneficial. The projections are excellent. It says that maybe a bit excessive, the projections, but it says that it could be 52% by 2022 in terms of an increment in African total African trade. And the spin-offs for across trade and industry generally are huge. It's obviously a right step, and it's to be applauded. There's no doubt about that. I share the concerns of some of my colleagues, and just wonder whether at this stage you'd be able to provide us with a sort of more detailed documentation as to say how you intend, how this is intended to be implemented, what the potential pitfalls are, what the issues are that we are looking for in terms of the overall intent. Because, you know, yes, you've got to, you can't swim unless you jump into the water, and as to paraphrase Kwame Nkrumah, when he said the best way to be, to learn about a continental free trade is to be a continental free trade. So we've actually got to do that. There's no two ways about it. But let's have something a little bit more substantial than these few pages here, because these few pages are worthy of applause, but we need to be cognizant in terms of our oversight, and you need to help us to point us in the direction where we should be looking. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Kachalia. Yes, I have just one broad issue in some ways that has been raised, but I know that even a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, our position was very clear, even at the WTO, and within, I understood, trade and industry itself, the department, and that is that it was important for us to focus on the harmonization of those borders, etc., and to that end, South Africa had requested, even at the WTO, that this some measure, mitigating measure or clause be put in that will enable those countries who had not yet harmonized their borders to do certain things. Because I cannot see us harmonizing our borders within 3 years. I really can't. And that if we don't do that, I won't repeat what members of the committee have said, we could face almost a decline in our benefits of trade. We want to have reciprocal benefits. We want to contribute complementarity, but not to the point where we simply flood it out because we have the sort of customs, the financial issues, the Durco issues, the this issue, the that issue are not finalized. Home affairs even for that particular matter. So one must really caution, and some other African countries, I believe, have the same view. And one, I do need to say, DG, I would say we need to be very cautious in walking. It doesn't mean we do not want integration in Africa and complementarity. Thank you. Over to yourself, DG.
Honourable Chair and members, thank you for those inputs. As I said, it is really, it assists us in taking the matter forward. And I think I'll just deal with some of the overriding concerns raised by a number of members. I think Honourable Shlobo, McPherson, and yourself and others have raised the key issue about, obviously, I want to know also what are the, how do we deal with the potential negative impacts? And what are the dangers and so on. I think that's a constant theme. If I can start to deal with that issue, as you know, I mean, in general, all free trade agreements or free trade has pros and cons, and it depends how it's managed. And as you can see, the approach we've adopted is really to be very careful. And as you know, many are accusing South Africa of slowing down things, of not signing agreements, as we didn't do at the initial continental free trade area, and even this agreement has been going on for 5-6 years. And the reason for that is that we've always maintained that it must be a legally rigorous and binding agreement, and that you must deal with proper rules of origin. You must see that it has a real impact, because many times you have declarations and aspirational agreements, but it has no direct economic impact. And that is why we've insisted that everything go through proper legal processes, and that we negotiate in detail the tariff reductions we're getting from each other, but also especially what Honorable Mushlobo is raising about third country imports. because some people bring in very cheap imports. They just add the buttons and the zips to the clothing, and we get that. So that's why rules of origin is absolutely important to do that. So I think that's why we can do it, and there's Honourable Esther Hazen, that is why we didn't sign the Continental Free Trade Agreement. Not we signed a declaration to say we are fully in support of it, but we said the legal agreements must be properly scrubbed, must be checked, and that way it must go through the Ministers of Justice. And as you can see, we're only now going to sign, we're in a position to sign now because the Ministers of Justice of the whole continent have met. They've gone through the agreement and they've made it legally rigorous. So I think we can give that comfort and we can put that in more detail. The second issue that we've insisted on is that, as I said, that part we must go at the pace of which countries can move at the right pace. And that's why I think Juan Kelly mentioned the issue of variable geometry. That is, some countries who are obviously small and very weak, and so on, they must be able to liberalize at the pace which suits them, and that we don't go for a one-size-fits-all, that everybody just drops tariffs no matter how strong or weak your economy is and so on. So that's how we've built in that members. But as you know, South Africa has a positive trade balances with almost all the countries on the continent, and we've actually got massive trade imbalances. If you take Kenya, we export about 8 billion rand, and we import only about 200 million. So obviously the benefit of trade is on our side. And I think we don't have any worries, Honorable Eerstezen, about loss of competitiveness. Of course, there are certain sectors which are always vulnerable, like clothing and textiles. But as you know, South Africa is the only one who has massive capabilities. And for example, it's only ourselves in Morocco that has an auto industry of any size. And even then, it's very small compared to ours. So we will obviously maintain a comparative and competitive advantage, but we must ensure that our industry, as I said, we move up the value chain constantly so that we remain competitive on the continent. But I think we can give a summary to the members where we lay out how we've dealt with all the potential abuses and potential negative impact on the trade. And then just on SACU, as you know, we've got almost a 100-year-old customs union and so on. What we've proposed to the rest, as you know, people wanted the customs unions for the whole of SADC, and they wanted it for these things. We've said to people, let's hold on a customs union. Let's just move on a free trade area. Because as you know, customs union means goods travel freely across borders. There's actually no borders if you have a customs union. So we've said, because of our existing problems, even within our small customs union, we said, let's not deepen integration. Let's rather widen it. And that's why we're going for free trade areas rather than customs unions and so on. But even, as I said, even with the existing customs union, I think on the sugar industry, let me just say the biggest danger we face is not from Swaziland, because we've always been integrated with Swaziland. It's really, there's been a bumper harvest in India, and they are flooding the global market. And as you know, it's a situation where the whole, even Brazil is affected by this problem. So the issue is there. It's a short-term issue that we must deal with. ITAC is seized with that matter. We have to raise our protection because the world market is there. But I'll hand over to them.
Thank you, DG, and through you, Madam Chair. I think DG has responded to many of the questions. On the questions on customs procedures, the agreement makes provision for cooperation in customs authorities across the free trade area. It doesn't make provision for harmonization. It simply says that we will have cooperation in the formulation of customs procedures and regulations, and where problems arise, you then have an opportunity to engage the other side. So it creates a platform for customs cooperation, which we don't have at the moment with, for example, with Kenya. It is an ad hoc arrangement at the moment. South Sudan, I think, is an important point.
Yeah.
They indicated to us, Honourable Member, that they are at the moment acceding to COMESA. So after they finish their accession with COMESA, they will then be ready to negotiate with SACU. So we did send a signal to South Sudan. The movement of business persons is not going to, it is happening under the realm of immigration, not under the realm of the trade negotiations. So it will be a side agreement. That's why, Honourable Member, I was a bit reluctant to talk about it, because it is a side agreement that that Home Affairs is leading on. But they identify in the draft agreement, they identify categories of business people who will then be in a position to, who will be eligible for visa on arrival. So the immigration officials then do a screening of, if you want to apply, you are a business person from Ethiopia, they will screen you in advance. There are processes that they follow from an immigration standpoint, which will facilitate the movement of the business person. I understand it that they are negotiating the period for the validity of the visa, and also, as I say, the categories for different business people, a CEO or chief financial officer, whatever the case may be. But they will not be automatically entitled to a passport, an African Union passport, by virtue of the movement of business persons protocol. It simply seeks to create and to facilitate a faster movement of business people that will have gone through the necessary immigration processes. I think that the DG responded to the question around sugar. Maybe if I may also just say that there are, of course, we have the sugar Annex 7 of the SADC protocol, which regulates how, as SADC and SACU, how we will deal with the question of sugar, and particularly imports of sugar into the region. And in respect of sensitive industries and infant industries, we have a provision in the agreement that will grant specific protections to infant industries subject to certain criteria that will be agreed to in advance. And then, of course, we have trade remedies to regulate import surges and how you deal with issues of dumping and so on. Those are built into the agreement. Excuse me. Madam Chair, it is not envisaged that the agreement will ultimately lead to a customs union. For the moment, the agreement speaks only to a free trade area with a side agreement on the movement of business persons. I think the DG also answered the question about the signature. It is 22 countries who have signed the agreement that is establishing, and three have ratified, and we hope that we will soon...
Yes, out of how many?
Out of 26.
Right.
Yes, out of 26. So we will...
Come in now, Honourable Matlobo. Honourable Matlobo.
No, thanks, Chair. I thought the DG has responded broadly on issues. The information that we need, the Chief Director are going through now, these are the things that we need to bring back. The DG, you said there are these high-level benefits that are there and the disadvantages, and some of the answers need to be part of the package. So that when we go back and present to Parliament as a committee to support you, my problem is that the more there are certain responses, there is contradiction. For an example, this thing called migration, it's not a side issue. It's an important issue, Comrade DG. What you will expect is that your department will work with the colleagues so that you can see the harmonization. It's a central issue. Unfortunately, some of us used to attend all these meetings, you will know. And these agreements, it's an important issue. In the main, in the free trade agreement, there is a movement of goods, there is a movement of people. And the government must have a seamless way, because we are the lead department, even if others are doing certain parts just to get these things happening. That thing around the movement of people, when you come back from the DG, Home Affairs must be clearly be able to say, how are they handling it? It's not for the first time. Remember, there is one that is actually happening between BRICS countries right now. And there are certain other countries that we have. It's not a mechanism that, it's just a new mechanism. Then there was a new dimension, which is an introduction of a single African passport. That other AU summit, they started issuing it. And certain countries started, those are the new dynamics that are coming in. That's why we're saying, what is South Africa's readiness to be able then to ensure that we align? I'm here about the other one that we talk about, the issues of goods and so forth. If we can just be able to package that in just in the more consolidated report, I think our issues there are becoming more sufficient, because at least we'll have been able to say what are these pros and cons to be able to do it. But I'll discourage that if one organ of the state, not let me not use the word organ of the state, one department of the state, your elite department, you need to be able to demonstrate more cooperative governance and collaboration in the areas that affect your work. And one example is this one. There will be the other one around the Department of Transport in the Comrade DG when you start the implementation. There are other number of departments. For an example, that issue around customs. It includes finance and SARS and so forth. And these teams have always worked together in terms of multidisciplinary teams. But I think where we stand, the sufficient information and the responses that you have given, if those could also be reduced in terms of just making it a bit thick.
I think for us it is very important, DG. I know you would know that when we had the SEZs, etc., and people were coming in, investors, etc., the issue of the whole visa issue arose, business visas and so on and so forth. And I know the department was at pains to explain, on the one hand, yes, you want these visas issued. On the other hand, it sometimes becomes an open door to a stream, which is not the intention at all. So rather than repeating exactly what Honourable McLaubo has said, we are going to be needing more information in this regard. So if you would be able, in a short space of time, to respond to all the questions, then bring back the details of these issues themselves. Because one must remember, we have been cautioned ourselves about this just quick gratification. What are we ratifying? What are the implications for our economy and country? So that is why it sounds like we're not as positive. We are positive, but we need to be cautious about the implications. Thank you very much. If the Chief Director would just continue for a minute.
I think then I think we've completed the detailed issue. I think the point is taken that on the issue of a multidisciplinary team, there is, as correctly said, Honourable Mashlobo, there's a multidisciplinary team, and as we indicated, we lead on the issue of the trade in goods, which is the substance of the free trade area. But as he indicated, there are also discussions around customs, which is led by SARS,
and then there is the one on immigration, which is led by Home Affairs, but it's the start of one team. So we will also then attach more information on those two issues as well, on the immigration issue and the customs issue. But then we will then give you a comprehensive document, which includes, as I said, the full terms of what is covered in the agreement, what are the things we're doing to ensure that we deal with any possible negative externalities arising, how we deal with those issues. And then, Honourable Chair, we can give you the detail, but I take it that in general there's a support for the thrust of a free trade area, but the detail must be given to you.
Yes, I'm just looking around at the committee. I think there's an agreement from everyone, Honourable Khadebe.
No, Chairperson, I think the DG captured it correct, that we are in support of that, but we cannot say that we agree with it today before we get all that outstanding information. I think that the first week of August, that's when formally the committees are going to sit again. But I think that that information must be obtained at least 2 days before. DG, at least 2 days before.
Even a week before. We distributed the last week already.
Yeah. So that's why it's critical that we have that. And then the other issue must be included, that, and that extra information is the issue of that dispute settlement mechanism. Just expatiate on it, how it's going to look like. Because we had a problem with other dispute settlement mechanism. If you can have expansion, who's going to compose it, who's going to appoint it, when a person is not satisfied with that mechanism, where will that person go to? If you cannot have that detail.
Just a small one, Comrade Chair, yeah. With your permission. Comrade DG, you need to be a little bit observant in the interchangeable of the lingua. FACU, FADEC. In the main, we're more talking about SACU. Remember SACU, because at least we're the champions, but the free trade agreement is about the three regions, ne?
Mm-hmm.
And we need also to hear more about that, because the other members were not SACU, ne? In that, but in the SADC. But generally, like our chief, our whip, ne? The trust of the principle we support. If we had every information, DG, like you're explaining, we could be able to make a determination today. But at least you know the key areas we need now. Thank you.
Right. If we are, if members believe that they have concluded their discussions and engagement at the moment, and that we will await further information and we will establish a date for that in the first week of August. Members know we have a meeting, if I'm not mistaken, on the 31st of July. All right. So we must thank the department for that, and also the chief director for being here with us so that we could get a better understanding. But this is a critical agreement, and one that we must fully understand all the implications of, and the readiness of our own country to benefit from it. So on that note, it isn't, you know, tea break. We are very happy that it's still half an hour away, because I did say we would do the minutes then before tea. And members, we have a lot of minutes to do. I may say for the record, because it's not appropriate that the wrong impressions are going down concerning when documents arrive. The DTI sent these documents a week ago. It was received here in Parliament. They are, I believe, emailed to everyone by the relevant secretary on duty. And that would have been either Mr. Medema, I'm not sure who was on duty last week, Mr. Hermans, and maybe Mr. Hermans, you can tell us if they were emailed to everyone.
Chair, as you were aware, I was not here last week, I have forwarded it yesterday to members, which is, but Mr. Medema will be able to answer it this week.
Okay. Well, when someone is sick, no institution or division or committee should collapse because of one person. Mr. Medema, did you email that out to people on Tuesday when it became apparent that Mr. Hermans was medically off duty? Right. You're not talking on mic, and we needed that on mic. So that is one of our challenges. I think the department should rest at ease. Parliament did receive it. It is an internal problem, right? And yes, exactly. And I'm not removing that phrase from my...
With your respect, I think we'll have to fix our things. Not okay.
No.
Not okay. You want us to make rational, cogent decisions. If the department gives us documents religiously on time, we are honorable members who should be trusted that we will keep the information safe. With due respect, it's not on. Except that the quality of the members, they are good, they are able to engage. It's not fair. I don't want to complain. But the thing that I complained when I joined you here is the method of work. Let's make our job easy so that we can look professional. But I don't want to labor on it. I thought it's a small issue.
It's a huge issue.
And it is like it's a trend.
Well, you arrived the day, if I recall, we lost an entire day's work because the wrong documents were before us. And we have gone from bad to worse. We have been in touch with Mr. Skumbuza Shabalala, who is the Director of Administration. After that, our call will be to the Speaker. Currently, the Director of Administration has committed himself to addressing this issue. As a result of a lack of support or insufficient support for this committee, we have lost 2 full days of work and we are already on a tight schedule. So I don't want to belabor the point and tell you how much correspondence I'm sure I've now got a dossier on it in this issue. Yes. I do believe I'm almost in an underground sort of environment at the moment. But on a serious note now, the minutes were amended 2 weeks ago. We never got them last week, but we got them this week. Again, when I say we never got them last week, they were not put before the committee at all. This week we did get them, and we got them, I think, on Thursday last week or Wednesday. So I believe you have the full package of amended minutes. Am I correct? Has every member got that package? I would like Mr. Medema to sit here because these are minutes you dealt with, to my knowledge. And then I want the package of minutes. Let's see. I know that Mr. Hermans did give them to me.
Thank you.
Of April. Well, suddenly we don't have enough members, and we had 7 members here. We had enough members, and the only apology I got was Mr. Khadebi. I don't have any other apology. Who's not here now? Mr. Matloba, Honorable Matloba, and Honorable MacPherson, yes. The inefficiency is contagious. We don't have enough members, Honourable Mantash. Well, we only had one apology, and that was Honourable Khadebi. We didn't have the other two. Right. We are doing minutes. That means we need a quorum. Right. Where is Honourable Esterhazen? He's not around. The 17th of April. Now, these are all minutes which went back for amendment. Some went back for amendment because there was no register. Do you recall that? So let's start off with this one. We have everyone here. You have the election of an acting chairperson. And you do have the register here. I am asking staff again, when you put an apology, the apology must be medical, must be party, or something, or it must be absent. That is important because, believe it or not, the rules of Parliament and your salary are based on the amount like that. Leave, medical leave is separate. And we will no longer be accepting AP here. Page 1, page 2. Are there any corrections? Is this correct now? Can we have someone to propose amendment quick? Honourable Williams, seconded by the...
Adoption.
I'm so used to the damn amendments at this point. Honourable Williams, adoption, seconded by Honourable Guyani. Right. That's got a register, right? The second, well, we're on to the 18th. Members, you may not have the 31st of May in front of you, do they? The reason you've got the 31st of May in front of you, all right, is because of page 2, the 31st of May. The reason being, the committee noted that the agenda at, on page 2 of those minutes, point 3. We're not jumping them. It refers to the decision we've just taken. The decision we've just taken on registers and documentation. Unfortunately, this is the manner in which it's dished out. Committee noted that the agenda and matters under discussion were part of the budget vote, so the relevant reports should be attached. So you're looking for the registers and the relevant reports. At this point, do you want to explain that issue, Mr. Hermans, about the report?
The chairperson, on the instructions of the House chairperson and Parliament, the decision was taken in the beginning of the year that that we will move away from submitting documents and presentations, and that because Parliament has a Parliament app, all these documents will be going forward should be on. If members do not have the app, we will make arrangements tomorrow for Parliament officials to come and ensure that it's on members' laptops or iPads or tablets, because going forward, all documentation will be placed on the app. So going forward, we will not get hard copies of these documents anymore. It will be on the app as the instructions from the House Chairperson.
Yes, I have said that I want that qualified. Yes, the app, that is a decision, but that one must always have adequate notice. And so therefore it will only kick in effectively when we come back on the 31st of July. I hope that's clear. So we move on here now to the 18th of April. The 18th of April here, page 1. These were minutes again where documents weren't attached, but the references are to the budget. Page 2. Mr. Herman said that we would make the budget report available. Mm-hmm. So the problem remains, Mr. Hermans, you see, to make it available only on the 9th when you are referring to it before, not you personally, is a problem. So can we then have someone to propose the adoption of the 18th of April? Honourable Buyani, seconded by the Honourable Williams, thank you. The 24th of April, we had quite a full house then, 227, 24th April. That I suggested 2 weeks ago when we first got the minutes. You need to put these minutes with all of your sugar documents in the file, because there was a huge focus on the sugar issue, the SARSA issue, and the CAB. There was a report back by CAB, but a major presentation by SARSA and DTI was also there on page 3. Page 4. Yesterday the report was handed out to members for the third time. Please bring reports to the meeting. I think that report was issued at the end of April. It was adopted on the 24th. Not the 25th, which is a typo as you've got. Page 5. But you see, again, we're having a problem here. There is a serious problem, which I alerted Mr. Hermans to. It's Tuesday the 24th that this happened, okay. And the report itself and the, not DTI, but SARSA or the DTI indicated that they were still having a meeting on the 24th. So we do want to have a clarification of that email. Was it after our meeting or before? So those are amended. Can we have someone to propose adoption? Honourable Mantash, seconded by the Honourable Williams. 25th of April, which is a Wednesday. Quite a few people present. There doesn't seem to be anyone. Yes, an apology from Honourable Mantash there. Page 2. page 3. And we've got a register. And you, yes, Honourable Williams?
Chairperson, point 6 on page 3 is the adjournment. It's exactly the same. It seems to be like a copy and paste from the minutes before. It says the committee adjourned at 13:38, and then on the minutes before, and then the minutes afterwards, the committee adjourned at 13:38. So it's a bit unusual. What, we finished exactly the same time on the next day? I don't think that's possible.
The only difference would appear to be when it was adjourned until, and that is Wednesday the 8th of May. It is, it is quite a coincidence that we finished to the minute. So I'm not sure who did these minutes, Mr. Medema. It's not a good idea to be creative there. Right, can we then have someone to propose the adoption of these minutes? Honourable Buyani, seconded by the Honourable Mantosh. The 8th of May, another Tuesday. We had a huge number of apologies for some reason there on the 8th of May, but most parties were present. Page 1, page 2. Page, there's a different time here, yes. Page 3, when we adjourned. Has everyone got them? Can we get a copy for Yvonne? Page 3. Right. Again, that was G26. We started at 10:30. Right, okay. There we are. For someone to propose the adoption there. Yes, Honourable Kachalia, seconded by the Honourable Buyani. The Wednesday, the 9th of May. Now, this is when the budget report is attached. So many things which arise after these minutes, you can refer back to this report. Page 1. And you can note to Honourable Khadebi that is the day that he actually came into the committee formally. He was in it. Three here. Page 1. Page 2. And we adjourned then at 1 o'clock on page 3 to the 16. There is a register there. Yes, Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, my apology is not reflected on the register, but it is reflected on the minutes themselves. Normally they write apology, political, whatever it was.
In fact, that is my oversight because I chaired that meeting. Someone give me a pen.
And please note that, are you actually noted correctly on the front page? Right. Yes. If I'm not mistaken, that was the China period, wasn't it? Party business. It was the China social. So, can we please have someone to propose adoption of the amended minutes? Be a good idea if you did as well, William. Honourable Kachalia, seconded by Honourable Buyani. We then have Thursday, the 31st of May. Who doesn't have Thursday, the 31st of May? Right. On Thursday, the 31st of May, who was the committee secretary? Oh, Mr. Medema. Right. Well, it's a full house with only the Honourable Kirsten Hazen not here. I don't even know the reason for that, Honourable Kirsten Hazen, purely, not because of you, because we asked for the register to be located 2 weeks ago. It has not been able to be located. Now, I have a request to make. The request is, as you know, the minutes are a legal document. Would you agree, and I need this formally adopted, because this is a legal document we're looking at, I need someone to propose that on the basis of page one and their memories, that they sign the register. Honourable Ms. Lawball.
Well, thanks, Honourable Chair. I will concur that we should do so because we're part of that meeting and the register could be circulated for those reasons.
Thank you, Honourable Ms. Lawball, seconded by the Honourable Williams. Honourable Williams?
Chairperson, yeah, I do second. I think that we should fill in that. I was present at that meeting. But I do think that we must do something about this attendance. Recently, I requested my full attendance for the last, since I came to office in this Parliament, and that list that I received from the Secretariat was completely incomplete. And I had to go back to my own minutes to see where I was. So basically, there's no minutes from the Secretariat of this committee telling us when we, how many meetings we've attended, what we've attended. It's completely in disarray. And I think that something needs to be done about this because it's absolutely unacceptable. Thank you.
Yes, this has been raised. We did have a record of that effectively maintained when Mr. John, when Mr. Woodington was our assistant, we had a record of attendance given to us every year and at the end of 5 years. That system disappeared as many other assistants followed in his wake, as it were. So we need to get that back. If you have never kept a where is the assistant now? Will you make sure she gets that information? Honourable Williams?
Chairperson, I don't think that we should just hold the one assistant responsible for this. I think the Secretariat should take responsibility for not having the correct our attendance to these meetings. I mean, we actually have been deployed to Parliament. Surely somebody must know how many meetings I've attended. And that should be the Secretariat. And I think the Secretariat should take responsibility for this. Thank you.
I agree with you. We were talking about the particular member who should deal with it in the first place. But it is a collective responsibility of the Secretariat. And whoever is the Secretary on that day has an obligation to ensure that the register comes back to the desk. Apparently it did come back to the desk and it was mislaid. That is the information I received.
Chair, in response to Mr. Williams' question, I think we do take responsibility for that. We are in the process of verifying to make sure that all the attendance that of members for the last 4 or 5 years is accurately captured. So hopefully when members return, we should have a completed and accurate list of that available for members.
Thank you very much. Now, I was in the process of going through the proposal, the seconding, but there is another issue. This is a legal matter now. Are there any objections? No. Fine, thank you very much. Yeah, no, you know, the Chinese route now and carry. Right, but what I do want to say, honourable members, thank you, and let us all ensure on the secretariat that these the records are kept, and that when someone is absent, you encourage the chairperson, if you can't do it, to put the reason for the apology. Medical, party business, study leave. Those are the three forms of actual leave you'll be getting. Please do that in future. Now, who else was there who hasn't signed? Now, we better check now. Right. All right. Now, on that note, we've gone to the 31st of May. I believe the minutes in June were, that now, not the amended, but fresh minutes of June were handed out, distributed. I was told, yes, okay. Now, that is why we have yet another one. Like I say, I think the matter has become so serious, as I said to the Honourable Mr. Shabalala, that I'm not sure if we're even legally operating the way we're carrying on. This is Parliament. It's very, very important these records are maintained and that all minutes arrive a week after a meeting, so that you can amend them if necessary. The 5th of June. Right. On the 5th of June, which was a Tuesday, there were many, many apologies. In fact, many for medical reasons. I do remember that. You know, we had yourself, Honourable Williams, Honourable McLaubo, Languini, and I think Albert's was party business. So we need all the other signatures for this. Honourable Flanguini is not here, so there is a problem. You need to make sure you get that, all right? So everyone but the few names I've called out should sign, if you agree. Do you want... I'll tell you who was present. Fabs Khadebi Mantash Buyani Tierko, Kachalia McPherson. Now here's an interesting one. I don't know. On the other hand, now it says Alberts was present. No, let us not. I think only Honourable Alberts can answer that. Let us not. These minutes will not be adopted. You'll adopt them tomorrow. I want that matter cleared up today, this afternoon. All right? So he may well sign. We've now done the minutes of the 5th of June. Today is the 13th. Last week's minutes, are they here yet? Well, in theory, they should be here. But can we ask for those, at least the set of minutes of Tuesday to be made available to us and Wednesday? That's Tuesday, that's Wednesday. On Mr. Hermans? Yes. Believe you me, we need to break. But, members, what I do want to say before tea break, because I don't want to go down on the administration route again. I want to assure members that the divisional director will be taking steps and action now. So please, be reassured that we may be on track to where how we operated before Easter, or shortly before that, say before February. And let us hope that we can get back on track. Let us not waste the department's time, and let us not waste Parliament's time on this matter. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Tuesday, the 5th of June, Madam Chair, I'm fairly sure that I was present in this meeting. The next day, the 6th, I've actually sent Mr. Madima a note. I had to attend National Council in Durban, and I've sent him. And just about a secretarial work, I just want to mention on a previous comment, I think this is one of the most intense committees in Parliament. And I get regular information from the Madima and things, even over weekends. So I think the secretarial side or admin side of this committee is really doing the best that they can. Thank you. But I'm sure I was present just for the fifth meeting.
Well, let me simply put it this way. I disagree. I've enjoyed far better support when we worked 4 days a week and a fifth period Thursday nights. Honourable Khademi was here when we would work every night from 8 until 12 on Thursday. So that made it 5 days. And the support at that time, Mr. Hermans, you will confirm, we always had minutes done on time, the reports, etc. We do not have that now, and quite frankly, when I get here at 6:30, I often don't know what's happening. Now that's got to say something. I just don't know. I do not find that acceptable. I'm not here to navigate in the dark when I chair, and it's become that. So I will agree with you that we are the most intense committee. We have more work in this committee than any other committee, and I say that unequivocally and without any fear of contradiction. So we do want to ask all members of the Secretariat to please, let's get back to the earlier platinum performance. This is not the standard that you even, you know, exhibited in previous years. All right, so on that close to being positive note, we're going to break for tea. We've got a break because there's certain issues that I must deal with the Secretariat for 7 minutes. At the moment, the time is 5 to 12, or no, is it? 5 to 11. But 10:55. So let's get back at 7 or 10 past 11 at the latest. Thank you.
Yeah.